The New York Yankees called Gerrit Cole's bluff, and so he's sticking around for no additional money. Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Tuesday, November 5th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau, Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H on the Twitter machine. And Christian, there's a lot of stuff to get to from yesterday. Free agency has officially started as of 5 p.m. Eastern. Option decisions were due. Qualifying offers were due. We saw some surprising decisions in both of those. But before we get to those, we got to follow up on yesterday's show. We talked about Gerrit Cole opting out of the remaining 4 years and $144 million on his deal with the New York Yankees, and they had to decide whether or not to give him an additional year, 2029, at $36 million to automatically keep him. Per Jeff Passan, they're not doing that, but he's also not leaving. He will remain with the Yankees on the 4 years and $144 million. I don't really know the logistics of this. Is he signing a deal for that exact amount? Are they negotiating maybe adding a fifth year at a smaller salary? What are maybe trying to get a pay raise on the 144 across just the four? I don't know the mechanics here, but the Yankees just absolutely called his bluff and he caved, didn't he?
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like. It sounds like he caved. It sounded like he opted out, was hoping to get a better contract moving forward. We talked about on yesterday's show how he's aging. He's getting older. A four-year contract already by the Yankees is probably enough. And if they were going to decide to keep that, we thought it was in the best decision for the Yankees to let Cole walk. We all understand how great Gerrit Cole, a pitcher, is. But talking about those years at the back end of that contract are going to be questionable. We've seen it with great pitchers right now going on with Max Scherzer, with Justin Verlander, with people like that.
Who admittedly are a little bit older, but yes, same
situation. We're going to be in that same situation, right? So it's a confusing time. But what I do think is going to happen when all the dust settles is we're probably going to get somewhat of a adjusted deal where maybe the money is pushed towards the back end. So they have a little bit of more cash to work with in the earlier years here, Lindsey, and that's going to help them maybe add a guy like Juan Soto. Just those little extra dollars might help just push that over the edge. So I'm guessing that's where it's at. I'm guessing that opt-out was for a fact of Cole trying to test free agency. Didn't work the way that he planned it. But it does make you question, because he is a Boris client, is this another loss right off the bat for Scott Boris? Because last year he had a whole bunch of issues, especially with the pitching market. Right off the bat, we're seeing it happening once again, because I think you have to call this an L for Scott Boris right off the bat in free agency this year.
It in retrospect, I mean, if Gerrit Cole gets more money, right? If they redo this deal and it's 4 years, 160, even 4 years, 150, I guess technically it wasn't a loss because you use the leverage of opting out to get more money. But it does feel like it was a little bit of a, maybe you overvalued yourself or you overestimated how desperate they would be to keep you, I think is kind of what it is. And just to kind of clarify people, and we had this come up in the YouTube comments yesterday on the show, we're not saying Gerrit Cole's not a good pitcher. We're saying $36 million for a 38-year-old in 2029, 39-year-old, is not the best financial decision. And rather than just give him that money for that year, maybe walking away was the best decision. There's a middle ground here, and this is the middle ground of he is sticking around. That fifth year may be an option year. They may make it into a club option. That's what I would offer if I were the Yankees. It's like, hey, tell you what, like we will make it a club option that automatically vests on certain conditions. If you're still healthy enough to pitch effectively to make 22 starts or pitch 175 innings in that last season, this option will automatically get picked up, right? You can't condition an option on performance, on like ERA or things like that, but you can condition it on number of starts or number of innings. Maybe they put in some incentives and some escalators in here. Hey, the default on this option is X amount, but every fifth start, you make the season before it goes up or something like that. Like maybe they find a way to do like that where they can get the insurance of if you're still effective, if you're still able to go out and post, you'll get the money. But I very rarely agree with management, right? I am a player person. I want the players to have all the power possible. Kudos to Cole for trying it. I do think this was the right decision for the Yankees to not cave and just automatically add a $36 million salary that year. We gave the list yesterday. Everybody else on the list who has a guaranteed salary that year, with the exception of Aaron Nola, is significantly younger than Gerrit Cole. And I do think it just seems kind of folly to guarantee a pitcher a $36 million salary that far in advance, that late in their career.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you on that one. I am going to go a step further and say I think that the Yankees shouldn't even have offered the contract. I know they offered it in the past, and this is the exact same contract that we're dealing with in the past, but they had an option. They had a way to get out of that contract and mm-hmm. move forward. When you look at the pitchers in the free agency market right now, when you look at the priorities that they need to be chasing right now with Juan Soto, I think that they should have moved their priorities a different direction, maybe had a reunion with Cole later on at the end of the offseason. They didn't have to make that decision today. They just had to make the decision for that contract little note in yesterday's decision-making, which they really didn't even have to make that decision. They didn't even really make that certain decision, Lindsay. They went back to the old one. So yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb here and still remain with my take from yesterday. The Yankees made a mistake by signing Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, or however they're keeping him. We don't really know what the logistics are here, but
I will say
this is kind of a free agency signing. I don't know.
Right. It's true. It does. Is that the first one? You know, that was a big question. Like, was he a free agent for just a few minutes in time? It is really interesting. Is he really technically a free agent right now because they didn't follow the rules of the old contract? Are they making a brand new contract? Because what was really just put together was the Yankees are planning on staying together with Gerrit Cole. That was the words that were coming out across social media. So mm-hmm. it is really interesting to see what is going on with Gerrit Cole. But I will say this, all of this conversation we're having right now is null and void if they win a World Series in the next 4 years. It doesn't matter. But if they don't win a World Series in the next 4 years, when Gerrit Cole is on this pitching staff and a big part of this pitching staff because he's getting paid nearly $40 million a year to do so, then we're going to look back at this moment in time and see what pitchers they missed out on because they decided to sign Gerrit Cole to continue on with his career as a New York Yankee and wonder what could have been. And I'm sure New York Yankee fans will love to talk about what could have been because they've been doing that for the last decade, waiting to get back into that World Series moments. So it will not matter whatsoever if they win the next 4 years. But if they don't, Lindsay, this is going to be a conversation we have for a very, very long time.
Last part of the Gerrit Cole conversation before we move on is the fact that some of the other major pitching free agents on the market in Corbin Burns and Blake Snell, the fact that if you were to move on from Gerrit Cole, your best options to replace him are also Boris clients. Do we think that that had a role in the decision to just, we're going to stick with Gerrit Cole on the original deal and we'll negotiate something a little bit better because the only option you would have had for a frontline starter to replace him in free agency that wasn't a Boris client was Max Fried?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. But I will say this, if you acted like you had to sign one person that's on your squad that's a Boris client because you couldn't get somebody else, then you'd never sign a free agent because about 80-85% of all big names right now are Boris clients. So I'm...
Juan Soto is also a Boris client. So, right. So I guess just letting Gerrit Cole go may have, you know, hurt your chances with bringing Juan Soto back. And that probably has something to do with it, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I agree. But I will say this, that the Yankees didn't start this motion. It was Gerrit Cole that started this motion with his opt-out. So I think they still had an opportunity to go ahead and, you know, in a respectful business decision,
right,
walk away from this deal after Gerrit Cole did what he did. And I don't think it would have affected how Boris handled the rest of the free agents, you know, with the New York Yankees in 2025. But it doesn't matter now. We are going to have Gerrit Cole, and I love Gerrit Cole. I think he's a great pitcher. I'm excited to watch him continue to pitch. I'd like to see him try to find a way to get the Yankees back to the World Series and win the World Series, because I'm sick of hearing that narrative of the 2009 thing over and over again. I'm sick of that. So I'd like that to happen. I just don't think it's the right decision once we get towards the end of that contract, because they're at an inflection point with all those baby boomers coming up. Now you're going to have to shift. You're going to have to go in a different direction, and it might go back to the old ways where you start trading some of these prospects to bring in some guaranteed major league talent to make sure that this team is ready to perform and contend in 2025, 2026, instead of worrying about 27 and 28.
Yeah, I do think the Yankees have a lot of holes to fill as far as the infield's concerned, a lot of different things to figure out. Okay, so yesterday was the qualifying offer deadline. 13 players received qualifying offers, if my math is right. Obviously, I don't think very many of them are expected to accept it. Almost no players do. Every now and then, somebody will. The whole idea here is, I think it's just over $21 million. If you decline it and you sign somewhere else, your team receives a draft pick in compensation, based on their status of receiving revenue sharing, paying into the CBT, things like that. Here is the list. Juan Soto, New York Yankees. For Baltimore, they had two. Corbin Burnes, Anthony Santander. The Mets had three. Pete Alonso, Sean Manaea, Luis Severino. Willy Adames got one from Milwaukee. Alex Bregman got one from Houston. Max Fried got one from Atlanta. The Dodgers gave one to Teoscar Hernandez. The Boston Red Sox gave it to Nick Pivetta. Christian Walker, first baseman, got one from Arizona. And Nick Martinez got one from Cincinnati. Full disclosure, I learned yesterday you can give more than one qualifying offer. For some reason, I was thinking it was like the NFL franchise tag. You could do one per team per offseason. You can give more than one. You just can't give a guy one if he's already had one. That's why Blake Snell didn't get one. Of the list of guys who did get a qualifying offer, which one of those is the most surprising name to you?
I have two, but I'll stick with one here. And I think Nick Martinez was my most surprising for the Cincinnati Reds. Yeah. When you look at the season he's had, it was a very impressive season, but it's just not a name that you were thinking of when you thought of, you know, names to be qualifying offers. I think he has a strong chance to agree and keep that qualifying offer for, you know, the $21 million. Nick Martinez had a great year last year, but it was back and forth between the bullpen and the starting rotation. He went into the starting rotation after the Frankie Montas trade and stayed there for the Reds. But when he stayed there, he was great. And, you know, when you look at the rotation for the Reds moving forward with Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo, you know, there's a lot of really nice pieces. And adding in a guy like Nick Martinez on a $21 million contract, I just didn't see happening for the Cincinnati Reds. But I think it's going to be a really interesting piece for them in 2025. I would say that out of all of them, I think he's going to accept. What about you? Who's your most surprising?
On the Martinez note, 3.84 ERA in 16 starts, 89 innings pitched. He's been really good since he came back from Japan. He spent like 4 years in Japan. And since he came back, 2 years with the Padres, ERA's under 3.5. His total ERA this year was 3.10. I think he'll probably take it as well. That would position him. This was his age 33 season. He turned 34 in August. This would position him for one final deal next offseason, right after he turns age 35, that he could get signed a 2 or 3 year deal, you know, get some. If he has a good season, you could see him signing for 3 years, $35 million, get one final deal and right off in the sunset. I think the other surprising one to me was Nick Pivetta. He's 31 years old. He's in that age where, yeah, you would expect him to do a thing, but his Boston tenure has been a little bit frustrating, right? He's had ERAs in the fours for four straight years. He's been pretty close to his fielded independent pitching. It's not like he's been really, really hurt by that defense. Nick Pivetta, like, he has a really good fastball, but he's been a fly ball pitcher. He gives up a disproportionate number of home runs. And so it just felt like the best scenario here was Nick Pivetta getting a change of scenery, right? Going somewhere that isn't as bad with fly balls, because obviously Boston's got, you know, whether it's the monster and a, you know, a routine fly ball that would be caught at the warning track in another park as a double there or a homer. The incredibly short porch for the pesky pole and right. Felt like him going somewhere else was the best outcome for all teams. But now with him getting a qualifying offer, the question's going to be, if he declines it, are teams aggressive enough about being willing to sign Nick Pivetta for him to get anywhere near the sort of deal he could have potentially got without the qualifying offer? I kind of think maybe he should just take the $21 million, go one more. If he has a season just like the one he had, you know, ERA just over 4, 26 starts. He struck out 172 in 145 innings. Like the punchies are there. He walked almost a career low 2.2 per nine innings. If he has another year like that, he hits free agency shy of his 33rd birthday. He can still pick up a four-year deal or something like that, and they can't tag him with a qualifying offer. So it just seemed to be kind of risky. You paid him $7.5 million last year. Are you cool with paying him 21 for the same production in 2025? Just an odd decision to me.
It's an odd one for sure. And I was surprised when he got qualified offer. I'm surprised where they chose him over Tyler O'Neill. I thought Tyler O'Neill was the team, the guy
or both.
Red Sox that was going.
I learned you could do both. Or both.
Right. But yeah, if you were going to pick one, though, I thought O'Neill was going to be the guy for Boston. They decided to pass on him. He's probably my most surprising one that did not get picked up a qualifying offer because he really resurrected his career last season with the Red Sox. He's going to be a nice, you know, piece for whoever goes ahead and signs O'Neill. But Pivetta is interesting. If he likes where he was at with Boston, I think he'll accept the $21 million as well because he's been there for quite some time. And that pitching staff needs help. You know, there's definitely a lot of questions about that pitching staff. Bello has not stepped up to the way that they want him to, although they signed him to a long-term deal. There's just a lot of, you know, Tanner Houck, although he was great for the majority of the season, started to fall off towards the end. There's just a lot of questions with how this rotation is going to be worked around. So spending $21 million on a guy like Nick Pivetta for a season, it shows that in my mind that I don't think they're going to be, you know, this already kind of seals the deal for me that they're not going to be true contenders in the American League East next season. That division is still a crazy division. You never know what's going to happen. But when you look at the top runners with the Yankees, with the Orioles, I don't see Boston in that conversation in 2025, at least right now. There's a long offseason to go, Lindsay. But with these small decisions that they're making and trying to think of adding like a Nick Pivetta for $21 million where you could use that money elsewhere to expand the depth of your team because there are a lot of problems with the Red Sox right now. I just don't know if that's the right decision, but we'll see what happens.
I just think it's wild that you're paying that if he accepts it, you're paying Nick Pivetta and Lucas Giolito a combined $40 million next season. It's just that to me kind of blows my mind.
He did opt in. He did opt into his player option. You're right. I forgot
exactly
about Giolito.
Okay. Before we go to break real quick, a player that didn't get a qualifying option, who was the most surprising to you? We probably have the same answer on this.
Yeah, I mean, Tyler O'Neill is one that pops up right off the bat, just talking about Pivetta, but you know, just based on recency bias and what we saw with the World Series, Walker Buehler's got to be in that conversation for me.
Yeah.
I think he has to be. What he did in the World Series, and I thought he was going to remain a Dodger because of that. Like, just they went with him. They saw his moment. They saw it was a perfect timing, and I thought that was going to help him stay with the Dodgers. Now, that still might happen, but not at $21 million a year. Which might be a good decision for the Dodgers because, you know, they've done great in free agency in the past. So I'm not going to say that they've mismanaged it any way, shape, or form. But what happened with Buehler this past postseason showed that he can still be the Walker Buehler of the past. It kind of made you forget what happened in the regular season. But it is still there, Lindsay. We should probably say that.
I'm going to throw out a scenario here of let's say that Walker Buehler thinks that he turned a corner in the postseason, that he is now the Walker Buehler that he used to be.
I hope so.
Why don't you just accept the qualifying offer, pitch a full season as the old Walker Buehler, you know, the guy who was a Cy Young finisher and an all-star but had ERAs under 3, and then go to free agency next offseason when it's you – what, Dylan Cease and Zach Gallen as the three best starters? Like, just why not just take the qualifying offer? I believe Walker Buehler just turned 30. He turned 30 over the summer. So you would go to free agency as a 31-year-old. You absolutely can still get a long-term deal. But being able to say, like, yes, I'm going from an $8 million salary to 21, and I have a chance to really have a platform year now. Whereas before, you, this was not a platform year you wanted to market yourself off of. You're marketing off previous potential. I almost feel like maybe you think about accepting this with the idea of, if I can go out and dominate for a season, I can get a $200 million deal in free agency. Whereas right now, nobody's giving Walker Buehler $200 million.
No, and no one's going to give him $20 million in the offseason as well. I think that if he would have got that qualifying offer, he would have accepted it and used that as a prove-it year. I think he's still going to get a prove-it contract where he gets a one-year deal to prove that he is still the Walker Buehler of old. It's just not going to be $20 million. So I think if he would have got that qualifying offer, I think he would have accepted it, Lindsay. And I think that's probably why the Dodgers didn't offer it to them, because they got their hand looking for big steps up in this free agency. It's, you know, the Dodgers have something up their sleeve as well. There might be a reunion still with Walker Buehler. It just might not be at that $20 million mark. I could see him sticking with the Dodgers, being in that rotation, sticking with the, you know, having a prove it year. They have a great pitching staff and coaching wise. Maybe a $14, $15 million deal, prove it wise. That's what I think is going to happen with Walker Buehler, no matter where he lands. It's going to be a one-year deal, maybe with a club option attached to it, and they're going to decide what happens with Buehler moving forward. I do hope that he comes back to being the Buehler of old, because it's fun watching him pitch. I had a blast watching him pitch at the end of that postseason, especially in Game 7. That was cool, coming in for his first career save in Game 5 of the World Series, I should say, excuse me. But it was just very fun, and I'm really hoping that he can come back to his old Walker Buehler, because that's what baseball needs. That we need good pitchers, and especially young pitchers like that.
Well, the good news is he has until November 19th to make the decision, so he's got 2 weeks to talk to teams, see what his valuation might be, and he could always return on that qualifying offer. He doesn't have to accept or decline it until 4 p.m. Eastern on November 19th. Let's get to the option decisions, but real quick, today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Encase Cards, custom card manufacturer. Encase Cards takes the source photos from you for whatever it might be. For me, it's you sports. It could be maybe your kid's a musician. Maybe it's for you and you're a musician, a theater star, whatever it might be. They take your source photos. Their artists personalize it for your child. For me, again, you sports. So they put on there the team name, the position, city and state, all of that good stuff, stats on the back. And then they print it on high quality cardstock, slab it, and ship it to you as a keepsake. Check them out, encasecards.com. That's NCASECards.com. Okay, so option decisions were made yesterday, and there was some very surprising decisions on both sides. I think one that's actually not that surprising, Clayton Kershaw declined his $10 million player option. He's already said he's going to retire with the Dodgers. This is just, he's having surgery. I think he's having toe and maybe it's knee surgery. But this is something they can see where he is in the offseason. He'll sign a new deal. In the meantime, they don't have to carry him on the 40-man roster. But the Atlanta Braves declined the $8 million club option for catcher Travis d'Arnaud. How surprising was this? And given the lack of high quality catching on the market, do you think there's a possibility that teams make a run after Travis d'Arnaud now?
Yeah, I do think that's the case. And there's one team that sticks out to me like no other, and that's the Chicago Cubs. I think we're going to see Travis d'Arnaud potentially be a Chicago Cub when it's all said and done. But yeah, it's a little surprising if he decides to stay and continue to play baseball and not retire, because he is a little older. I thought that he was a pretty much of a shoe-in. Sean Murphy didn't have a great year. He was injured for the Atlanta Braves for most of the year. And then there is a prospect coming up in the booths with Drake Baldwin. And potentially looks like he's going to be on that roster, or at least battle for a spot in spring training. But I didn't think that they were going to go that direction. I know we talk about it on Braves Today all the time, that Alex Anthopoulos doesn't really like young catchers. Right. And so we thought that he was a trade candidate with Drake Baldwin, and then sticking with Murphy and d'Arnaud. So Yeah, I didn't have him on my bingo card of being declined for a club option. But when you look at it, I guess it's really not that surprising too, because, you know, he is getting older and the Braves have to make some decisions. But I will say this, it sounds like he's a perfect fit for the Chicago Cubs if he decides to stick around and play some more baseball in 2025.
I could see them doing both Max Fried and Travis d'Arnaud together. I will say, I think Max Fried was the only one of Atlanta's starters who had a better ERA throwing to Travis d'Arnaud than throwing to Sean Murphy. Sean Murphy's, if I remember right, the team ERA was almost a full run lower throwing to Sean Murphy, but Max Fried was the exception. He did really well with Travis d'Arnaud, so I could see them maybe being a package deal and the team bringing d'Arnaud in to be Fried's personal catcher. Not that I think Fried's asked for that. He's not asked for that, but I could see it happening. You sent me a text yesterday when these happened. The Orioles made some surprising decisions here. They declined the option on Danny Coulomb, but picked up Sir Anthony Dominguez. Is this backwards? Is this should have been how they were going to do it? Or are we just surprised because it felt like you would have taken the season-long consistency of Coulomb over the potential of Dominguez?
No, I think Coulomb should have been, they should have stuck with him. I do think it's backwards. I think he's one of the most interesting relievers that is on the free agency market now. Mm-hmm. His numbers were great in 2023, but in 2024, he had a small sample size, but he was still effective. He had a great walk rate. His opponent batting average was only 147. And you look at across at least 20 innings of work, Lindsay, because he didn't have a lot of work because of his injury, but across, you know, all major league pitchers with at least 20 innings of work last season, he had the seventh lowest among closers in baseball. When you look at Emmanuel Clase, he was eighth on that. So that's pretty interesting to think about. Has a good enough mix to get out lefties and righties. It always better against left-handeds. And, you know, without Coulomb, the Orioles bullpen kind of struggled a little bit for those 3 months while he was out. So I thought he was the best fit for a lefty as an Oriole reliever. And you got to think that option wasn't very expensive for them to keep either. Guessing, you know, maybe like $4.5 million.
It was $4 million. Yeah. Like I would have rather paid him $4 million than paid $8 million for Sir Anthony Dominguez. Here's the thing to me with Sir Anthony Dominguez. If you're a contending team and you're trading away a reliever, that should be a red flag. Like, yep. The Phillies moved on from him at the trade deadline. The Phillies were at the time the best or second best team in the National League. Why are they giving up relievers and then trading for other relievers? That should have given you a warning to the Orioles.
That trade didn't work out for either side, Austin Hayes or Dominguez.
No, but like it's just one of those things. So he gave up 10 runs for Baltimore. Six of them were on home runs. He's a fly ball issue. So you're going to pick up the $8 million option. It just seemed odd to me to make the trade in the first place and then to double down by picking him up. A player that opted out that I'm kind of surprised here, Nathan Eovaldi of the Rangers, $20 million player option. I believe it vested because he completed 300 innings across 23 and 24. I know he's 35 years old, but is this something where Nathan Eovaldi's a lock to make more than $20 million next year? Or do you think this is something where he needed to get multiple years because he is now 35?
I can see it. I can see both being true. I think he's going to get a little bit more than 2 years and he's going to get more than $20 million AAV. When we talked about the Texas Rangers, there was a nice report that came out a few weeks ago. I believe it was Evan White. I believe that's his name, or Evan Grant. Excuse me if I can't remember. Dallas Morning News.
Dallas Morning News, yeah.
Yeah. Put out a report saying that the Rangers are looking to get below the luxury tax level, but they want to use some of that money that they get. They move away from putting Eovaldi into a bigger contract. So it would be interesting to see what they do in that behalf. Maybe he sticks with the Rangers, but there are going to be some suitors that go after Nathan Eovaldi. And I do think that it's going to be a larger than 2 year contract and he's going to get more than $20 million per year. He's going to be he's a top five contender for top free agency, at least in pitching status for 2025. He's one of the top five.
One of the top five. Okay.
Probably five, but he's up there.
Yeah, he's probably fifth of five, but he's fifth. Yeah, I have to admit, when I saw that, my first thought was, I wonder if he can fit in Atlanta. And a little bit of cleanup here. He's 34. He's turning. He'll be his age 35 season next year. He's only 34 right now. But I mean, he was an all-star last year. he's been pretty much the same guy. 3.72 ERA last year. 3 years with Boston, he had like I think a 3.79 ERA. So mid rotation guy, right? Could be a number three, a high end number four, a back end number two. Somebody who he's not going to start game one of the postseason for you, but if he's your guy in game three, you're not worried about it. His fastball velocity was still in the mid 90s last year. Barrel rate was pretty decent, 7.7%. Yes, he gave up a lot of home runs with the Rangers. Globe Life Field is one of the more homer-friendly parks in the sport. So, I mean, I do think he's probably the most surprising, or I guess he's probably the one positioned best to give you the most value of that top five or six guys, right? Sean Manaea may be ahead of him for some teams, but I do think that Eovaldi can be the one who gives you the biggest delta between his performance and his cost. And to me, that's really attractive. And I would expect his market to be some of the smart teams that we really trust with when they go out and acquire pitching. It always seems to work out. Thinking about teams like Atlanta, who they went out and they got Chris Sale and Ronald Lopez last year. One of them was a Cy Young. The other one had an ERA under two as a starter. Like, it feels like that's what this situation is going to be with Anthony Eovaldi.
Yeah, hear me out. This could be a domino effect for the Rangers. We obviously know that Scherzer's moving on, that's going off the books, but Eovaldi could be moving on now. And I do think the fact that they're trying to get rid of payroll, John Gray's in his final year of a season, $12 million. He could be a trade candidate. Dane Dunning is a non-tender candidate. He didn't have a great season, but somebody could think they could fix him, former first round pick, and $4 million out of him. This entire pitching staff could look, you know, brand new in 2025. It could be a domino effect for the Rangers.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see who leaves Texas. And I'm sure some contenders will be calling, trying to get some guys. My big question here, does Jacob DeGrom get moved? To me, that's something I think they'd have to attach some money to it. But
yeah,
does Jacob DeGrom
think about?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he signed 5 years, 185. He's owed $37 million. And I'm sorry, his salary in 25 is 40. It's 40, 38, and 37 for his next 3 years of salaries. Do they with a full no trade clause, do they consider trying to move him and see if he'll agree to go somewhere? I think that's something to watch. They're trying to cut salary. Jacob DeGrom is still going to be attractive to a lot of teams because he's been, when he's healthy, one of the most dominant pitchers in the game. It's just a question of when he's been healthy. So I think that's interesting to watch there.
Do you notice how this type of conversation is a little different than the conversation at the beginning of our show, talking about teams that should cut payroll? The Texas Rangers did it. They won the World Series. Now they're looking to regroup, retool, and some of that has to be with trading away players to get back in some salary and whatever needed. On the other side of the New York Yankees, you're signing a guy that is going to be old in 2029, and you haven't completed that World Series win yet. That's why I think this narrative is completely different. That's why it didn't seem to me like it makes perfect sense for the Rangers to do what they're doing right now. On the other side of the New York Yankees, to close it up, put a bookend on this show, Lindsay, it doesn't make sense. I'm going to say it one more time. The New York Yankees made a mistake by signing Gerrit Cole.
This is it. And if you disagree with us, let us know in the YouTube comments. While you're there, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop tomorrow's episode. If you're on audio, leave us a 5-star review to help folks discover the show. And either way, tell all your friends, go to firstpitchpodcast.com. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.